All right, we're live with Dr. Chris. How are you, Dr. Chris?
Good. Just getting ready for, as I'm messing with my light, getting ready for Mexico in a couple of days. So excited.
You're going to do a big presentation, eh?
Yeah, a couple of them. Yeah, Friday and Saturday. The only bad thing is the lectures go from 7:30 to 3:30. I'm like, come on, man, we're in Mexico. If we're going to do this, let's just go to Atlanta or something. But we'll still have some downtime.
All right, so we're rolling with the intro here. Ready? And we go. If you're like most folks Dr. Chris Fusterhausen works with, you're active, you want to take ownership of your health, and you want to age gracefully. The problem is there is so much conflicting information out there about health and wellness, it's tough to know who to trust. Most providers are limited by what insurance will approve, so it can seem like they're only able to help you manage your health decline with more meds. On the Dr. Chris Life Podcast, you'll learn how you can regain your confidence in your health journey. You'll learn helpful knowledge about programs, supplements, peptides, and hormones that Dr. Chris has used with thousands of patients just like you to help them crush their goals and be their best selves. So if you're ready to take charge of your health and are wanting to stay active and healthy so you can be a better parent, partner, or lover, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the Dr. Chris Podcast. Dr. Chris Podcast, where you can regain your health and regain your hair.
Yes.
All right. Today's topic is why losing weight is so hard when you're over 40 years old. I remember there was a time when I could eat anything. Oh, Steve, you can eat anything. And then one day I noticed that my shirts were fitting tight around my gut and it hit me and I thought I was immune to that.
Yeah. Very few people get through this life without having to manage their weight in some form or fashion, right? So many of us, when we're young, it's easy. We don't think about it. Eat burger and fries anytime you want to, suck down a soda anytime you want to. Don't really have to worry about it as we age. That doesn't always become the case. Most of the time it becomes the opposite, and it's a multitude of reasons that cause that.
You know, one of the things I really noticed over time is I learned how to work out a certain way when I was in high school. And I continued that way after high school. But there was this time I realized that the way that I was trained to work out wasn't applicable for my body state at later in life. And I think it's the same way in our perspectives of how we eat or how we approach exercise or other things.
Yeah, agreed. And I think it's even more important as we get older. We need to avoid injuries, right? Our bodies sometimes aren't as capable of, I always joke about CrossFit. I don't mind CrossFit. I like CrossFit. It's just sometimes us guys in our 50s get into CrossFit and we can't manage our brain from what we're doing. In other words, we want to be competitive with the 20-year-olds. And that's not always a good thing. Sometimes we can really hurt ourselves. We don't always modify as well as we should. But also as we typically, a lot of us get older, at least before retirement, we just don't have as much time on our hands as well. And so sometimes we got to be really, succinct in what our plan is when we're working out. So we get the best workouts in a short amount of time and get the results that we're looking for. But certainly as we age, it's super important that we remain moving. We're not meant to be immobile creatures. And, one of my points in my lecture this weekend is just get your patients mobile, get them moving. Let's quit being sedentary. We're definitely becoming a sedentary society year by year, decade by decade.
For those of you listening live, have you found it? You have the same challenges at a certain age. When did you first notice it? So why is it so hard to lose weight after you're 40? There's things in your body that are changing. We talk about them often as far as the need for peptides. What's at play?
Well, so there's a lot of things that go into why it's hard to lose weight when you're over 40. And I might even say it's hard to lose weight sometimes mid-30s and above. It's a little bit different for everybody. But I would basically say we find that it's much harder to lose weight as we age than it was. I'm about to be 52 in a couple of weeks. And I always say 52 is way harder than 42. 42 was harder than 32, right? I'm assuming 62 will be harder than 52 if I'm lucky enough to make it there. And the reasons behind that is typically all for some form of hormonal instability. You know, as we age, we're becoming typically more hormonally imbalanced, and we're losing our metabolic flexibility. A lot of our patients, as they gain weight, are becoming insulin resistant. And, you know, it's insulin resistant is the earliest stages of diabetes. It's not full blown diabetes. It's kind of in that very, very pre-diabetes stage. But patients who are insulin resistant, it's very difficult to actually lose weight because it's metabolically negative. Insulin is actually anabolic to fat, meaning it causes us to gain fat. And so, you know, I have a saying in my practice, you've heard a lot of them, but one of the things I tell my patients and I pound in their brain, and that is if insulin is up, metabolism is down. So it's really important as we age that you have a provider that's looking at the necessary lab metrics so that you can truly figure out why you're not able to lose weight. Because some of the things I always like to ask my patients, what have you done in the past to lose weight? What was successful? What was not successful? Why do you think you can't lose weight? Because a lot of patients are actually doing a lot of things right, but without any success. And it gets very, very frustrating for those patients.
Yeah, there's so much confusing information. And you see these things, people, the 10 things you need to do today. You need to eat, I always say spinach, you know, but then you eat spinach. I learned that I don't metabolize whatever the ingredients are in spinach. I don't get the benefits I thought I was getting even though I was eating it all the time.
Yeah. You know, everybody's a little bit different. And the biggest thing is having a real plan that put in place and someone monitoring that plan, you know, on at least like a monthly basis. And, you know, my patients were always learning, we're always adjusting, always adapting to what's going on. There's so much conflicting information. Like I'd like to discuss real quickly some news that hit the, let's see, it's about 3 weeks ago, I guess it hit the social media, you know, all across all the different platforms. And that was, there was a poster board presentation, by the way, that is not peer reviewed. It's just a poster board presentation where they had said that fasting causes a 91% increase in cardiovascular mortality, cardiovascular death. Okay. And it was like, oh, crap, you know, like everything we've been teaching everybody's out the window. Well, no, that was a poster board. And all they did is they did two surveys with patients that claimed to be fasters. Okay. It was a very small group compared to a much larger group that said they didn't fast on a daily basis. They didn't actually ask how often, how long you fast, anything like that, other than it was they ate 8 hours or less a day. They did two surveys 15 years apart. And oh, by the way, in that group, there was a much higher risk factors, like there was a much higher incidence of smokers in the fasting group. In any way, I can't believe the American Heart Association actually posted this like on social media, making people think that this was an accepted, you know, review when it was not. So it caused this backlash for a brief moment in time. Everybody's saying, oh my God, everything we've been doing is wrong. But no, there's plenty of good studies out there proving that caloric timing restriction actually works. It's good for us. It lowers heart disease, lowers strokes and heart attacks. So it's just important sometimes that we not be headline readers, you know, because headlines can really get us into trouble. I find doctors do that a lot. They headline read. They just see, oh, you know, fasting associated with 91% increase in cardiovascular death. Boom. Tomorrow they're telling their patients not to fast because it's bad for you. When actually, let's investigate that a little bit. Let's figure out what's really okay for us. So that we give the proper advice to our patients. So just piggybacks on what you were saying. There's so much information out there that I think most of the time this vast amount of information is to our detriment, not to our benefit.
Yeah, I think that really highlights the benefit of working with someone like you, Dr. Chris, because, you know, if you tell your friends, hey, I'm going to skip some meals. Oh, my gosh, why?
What's wrong with you?
Right. And then you got all these headwinds, news and articles, and then just the doubts in your head and you need someone that you can go to that can help you look at some stats, which is your labs, and really make good decision based on data instead of just hearsay.
Well, and you also have a lot of people out there that are just looking to tell you you're doing something wrong, right? They're like, hey, I told you that fasting was stupid because look, you know, you're killing yourself by doing it because, you know, they just, I hate to say it, but there's always going to be just as many people in your life, most likely, that are looking for you to trip and fail as they're actually wanting you to succeed, unless you do a good job of surrounding yourself with positive people, which is a good thing. But other things that lead to people not being able to lose weight, in addition to just hormonal deficiencies, is stressors. You know, cortisol that we release when we're stressed, you know, really has it. So what are we trying to do with our patients? So if we look at anabolic is trying to build something. Catabolic is trying to tear something down. That's why the term anabolic steroids that are causing you to gain muscle. So typically with our patients, we're always trying to be anabolic in some way to muscle, catabolic to fat, right? We're trying to lose fat. We're trying to either maintain or gain muscle. Cortisol is catabolic to muscle, anabolic to fat. It's like the worst thing you can possibly have. It does exactly the opposite of what we wanted to do. Testosterone is catabolic to fat, anabolic to muscle. It's what we want, okay? It's one of the other reasons that TRT is a good thing for most of our customers. Growth hormone, you and I talked about it before we jumped on. Growth hormone, there's only two hormones that are catabolic to fat, anabolic to muscle. Growth hormone and testosterone, okay? Guess what hurts our growth hormone levels? Being overweight, higher sugars, higher fatty acids. These are things that happen when we get overweight. Cortisol, you know, again, it's catabolic to muscle, anabolic to fat. So it's making us lose muscle. It's making us gain fat. What gets worse as we age? Sleep. What causes us to have higher cortisol levels? Poor sleep. As we age, you know, our body becomes somewhat dysfunctional, some more than others, of course, okay? And, you know, some of us are aging more gracefully than others, for sure. And that's why we're trying to help our patients pinpoint perhaps why they're not losing weight, what we can do about losing weight, you know, and we certainly do a lot of it. All of the focus right now is on GLP-1 agonists, you know, glucagon-like peptide 1 agonists, semaglutide, tirzepatide. There's even a new one coming soon. Those are amazing because they help reverse a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, the insulin resistance. They give control back to the patients of not being as hungry and feeling full more rapidly, and also, of course, calming down cravings. So they're amazing products. They can help in this process, but they're not the end all to everything. There's more that we have to do with some of our patients. It's kind of the point of my lecture on Friday that I'm doing actually with Leonard, who's been a guest on our podcast before, is that'll work for a lot of your patients, but I don't care what you do. There's always going to be a patient that's resistant to weight loss despite these tricks. And that's where, as a provider, you have to know how to dig deeper. You have to know how to, okay, have you positively affected their growth hormone? Have you helped with their cortisol levels? Have you worked on sleep? Have you worked on gut dysbiosis? You know, poor gut health raises all these negative factors in our lives. So I wish I could sit here and say that losing weight is easy. It's not. What we're here to do is to make it doable and easier. I always say easier, not easy. And we don't want to use GLP-1s as a crutch. We want to use them as a tool. I think that's a really important factor that I don't ever tell a patient it's as easy as just taking a GLP-1. My biggest pet peeve right now, I'm really happy that GLP-1 agonists have gotten so much fame and notoriety these days, and so many providers are prescribing them. I actually think that's great. The problem is there's a lot of providers prescribing them that don't do any other form of education. They're just like, Steve, here's your GLP-1, here's your dose, see you later. And literally, that's about the education they get. No nutritional counseling, no counseling on fasting, no exercise counseling. And then they wonder why they have minimal success. And then the rap gets, well, GLP-1s don't do all that. Well, yeah, they're just a tool in the toolbox of weight loss. So hormone replacement is a tool in the toolbox of weight loss. All these things go together. And really, I kind of want to even move away from the weight loss term and start saying it's more of metabolism, right? We're trying to affect metabolism. We're trying to be anabolic to muscle, catabolic to fat, to help these patients to take a comprehensive systemic approach to each patient for their metabolism.
I think one of the key points is that folks that come to you, they take ownership and they're part of the relationship and success of this. And it's more, you talk about metabolism and thinking of it as metabolism, but it's a lifestyle change that you're actually having to go. You're having to say, my lifestyle before 40 was this way, but I have to understand that my lifestyle going forward has to be different because the outcomes are obviously I'm gaining weight and I'm not feeling healthy. I'm not sleeping well. I'm healing slow. I'm having all these issues. Well, we need to change our mindset about how we go forward with our lifestyle.
Yeah. And I don't sugarcoat it at all. If a patient's not willing to change their habits at all, don't make an appointment. And I don't try to be mean about that. It's just, we're busy. If you're just coming to us thinking that we have the ultimate shortcut, I'm not the guy. If you want to work on things, now I'll be reasonable with those changes. I always tell patients, I rarely ask them to turn over the apple cart in one day. I want to slowly integrate all these different changes and see what kind of success we have from them. Some patients can make just a few changes and, man, they're off and running. Some patients we have to turn over the apple cart. That's just the way it goes. Everybody's a little different. The patients of mine that I take care of that don't have as much success are typically the ones that they'll admit, and I'm okay if you'll admit it, that, yeah, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing everything you say. I'm doing some of the things you say. Some patients will have success that way. Some patients won't. I always tell my patients, I'm willing to put as much effort into them if they're putting into their own health. And if they'll put a lot of effort in, I'll put a lot of effort in. But what gets weird in a relationship is as the provider, you feel like you're putting a lot of effort in and the patient's putting very little to none. The good news is we don't have a lot of patients like that. They understand the value of what we do. They understand that they got to do their part. We set parameters up on the first visit of what our expectations are for our patients as well. This is a team, and obviously they're on the team along with us. And if they're not willing to pull their weight, pardon the bad pun, there's only so much we can do. But yeah, you're right. We do have to change things. I would love to be able to eat Bluebell ice cream every night. And, God knows, my wife will tell you, I love ice cream. It's my weakness, but I can't. Not if I want to stay in good shape. Not if I want to live longer and healthier. Yeah, you're right. Things hurt a little more than they used to. But we can slow that down. We can minimize that. There's a lot of different things that we can do for these patients to help. Unless you're paralyzed from the neck down, there's every one of my patients can do some form of exercise. Now, maybe what patient A can do versus patient B is different. But, Dr. Seeds made the point one time, which I thought was great. Like, everybody can do some form of exercise. Maybe your form is different than mine. So we have to keep moving. We can't be sedentary. It's one of my pet peeves about retirement with my patients. I get very nervous when patients retire. It's like, okay, what's our plan after retire? Because if you get immobile and start staring at the TV, you won't do well very long. So I encourage my patients to work as long as they're working the amount of hours. I always say, slow down. Don't stop though. If you can just keep busy with something, I think that's really important for our brains and our body.
All right. So a patient comes in, they meet with you, you do a form of audit, so to speak, maybe labs, maybe other things. There's not one protocol that you subscribe to everyone. Everybody's unique. What are kind of the three general things that one would need to expect when they come in and talk to you? What are three things that I'm going to need to start to get clear in my head that I'm going to make a change in and commit to?
Well, so typically if they're 40 or older, we're going to probably need to institute some form of hormone replacement therapy. Like you and I talked about before, imbalanced hormones, menopause or low testosterone, women and men, can cause a multitude of issues in our body, insulin resistance. It can cause growth hormone deficiency issues, so many more things. And so, as I always say, if we're trying to get metabolically flexible again, trying to get away from metabolically inflexible, hormone replacement is the foundation of that. We're not going to go build a $1 million house on sand. We're just not going to do that. We're not going to be silly with our money. We're also going to need that for our foundation for our metabolism / weight loss patients. So expect to talk about hormones. Expect to talk about nutrition and fasting. I'm a huge advocate. If anybody, Steve knows this, but anybody watches our podcast or listens to our podcast much knows I'm a huge advocate of fasting. It just does nothing bad for us. We know that poster is not accurate. We know that there's good studies out there to prove that our longevity improves, our health span improves, our overall functioning, cardiometabolic risk factors go down with fasting. We're trying to get those insulin levels low. We're probably going to talk about possibly a GLP-1 and whether you're a candidate for that. And if so, how that's going to work. We're going to talk about movement. We might be past three. We're going to talk about movement and how we're going to adapt exercise. Are you exercising? Are you doing the right exercise? For example, I think everybody thinks the harder I work out in the gym, the more fat I'm going to burn. And that's not true. Now, I'm not telling you don't go out and kick your own ass in the gym or have a trainer to do it. That's great. You're great for your brain, great for your bones, ligaments and tendons and heart and lungs. I think that's amazing. But you don't burn that much fat unless you're doing zone 2 metabolism, which is a slower paced exercise. So we talk about that a little bit, because we're all geared to the faster I run or the heavier I lift, the more fat I'm going to burn. And that's just not true. It's like that theory that a lot of ladies have. The less I eat, the more fat I lose. And that's not true either. There is a point to where if we go below it, we're actually just going to burn muscle. And actually, the analogy I use with that when patients eat very little is your car has the ability to die on the side of the road. You can run it to empty and it'll just die or your batteries go dead, whatever. It's of an EV. Our body doesn't want to die. So if you underfeed it consistently, it's simply going to slow down. It's going to slow your metabolism down. It's going to take your RPMs down as low as possible so that you're burning as little as possible so that you're conserving not burning. Okay. And so, just properly educating these patients on how to eat. I'm not a diet prescriber. I'm not a big fan of like, hey, let's do this diet. As I've said on this podcast before, I think diet is something we do from point A to point B. And then once we reach point B, revert back to point A and go right back to eating how we did. We try to just adapt their eating habits to a new lifestyle. What can you eat? What can you get rid of your diet and still be happy? Things that I'm going to tell everybody right up front, if you're a big soda drinker and you're not willing to give it up, you're not going to be happy with me because I just don't believe in wasted calories like soda and candy and that sort of thing. There's much more to it, but that's kind of where the first visit starts and that we build upon each visit after that.
So this GLP-1, that is the semaglutide peptide, right?
Or tirzepatide.
Yeah. And so this is something that I'm curious. I don't know the answer to this question. Is this something they're going to take for the rest of their lives? Is this something that's just temporary? What's the general?
Yes and yes. I can do either one. So I think maybe what I'll do is say, what do you do when you get to goal? And so we do know that GLP-1s are amazingly good for us long term. They actually slow down neural degeneration in the brain. They increase cardiac function. They're great for our gut health, which, I think everybody today understands the importance of gut health. A, most Americans have poor gut health. B, gut health is tied to everything in our body. So if your gut health is poor, guess what? Your overall health is poor. C, they now know that depression anxiety is improved with GLP-1s. It helps curb those cravings that most of us, you know, give into at times, and that's why we gain weight. So do you have to come off a GLP-1 when you get to where you want to be body composition-wise? Absolutely not. We might lower the dose so that we're not losing anymore, so that appetite comes up a little bit. But let's say your budget doesn't allow for you to stay on it. That's the biggest reason people come off of it is budget, right? GLP-1s aren't inexpensive. Maybe one day they will be, but not right now they're not. And so budget is typically why patients come off of it. So yeah, we can certainly come off it if we need to. And you know, hopefully with their newfound lifestyle changes and exercise changes, they can maintain. But hey, what's the worst thing if once or twice a year they do a 30-day round of a GLP-1 to get off 4 or 5 pounds that they've gained? Because most of my patients will lose that in a month. So, you know, Steve shows back up once a year because he went on a Mediterranean cruise for 2 weeks and gained 5 pounds. Like, okay, let's get it back off. No problem. That's certainly doable. So that's why I said yes and yes. Both answers are correct. It's whatever the patient wants and what their budget allows for. If budget allows for it, I want them to stay on it. Okay. If you ask me, do I take a GLP-1? Yes, sir, I do. I think it's that important, but not mandatory.
Seems like at least it can buy you time to help your mind catch up to the perception of your changing lifestyle. You know, we get inspired and we try to make these changes, but often we slip and fall. We fail a little bit. And it seems like at least it can help your mind catch up with the changes that your body.
Oh, absolutely. What I would say is I know I've said, and I believe that losing weight's not easy, but the amount of easier that it becomes with a GLP-1 is pretty amazing. Okay. You know, I try to tell, I've been very honest on this podcast of my own failures, and diet is the one thing that I struggle with the most. I love sugar. Sugar is a very addictive substance. I would still love to have a dessert with every dinner if I could. But I don't. I wish I could. But when I'm on my GLP-1s, every now and then when I do lapse on it, I forget to take it or whatever. And, you know, I'm a typical doctor. I'm not always the most compliant patient. I can definitely tell those cravings start to come back up. And it's crazy how, like, I'll give you an example. We went to Hawaii 3 weeks ago. Without even thinking, not that I did anything wrong. It was just the day before I left, I took semaglutide, didn't even think about it. Got to Hawaii and I'm with all my friends and everybody's drinking and, you know, not excessively, but having a few drinks. And it's like, man, I must be coming to wuss. I can't even hardly drink one beer. Like, I just didn't want it. And I go, oh, you idiot. You took semaglutide 2 days ago. It's a weird thing to describe. It just makes you not want it. It takes away that reward mechanism, making that alcohol just not be what you want. They're looking at it now with addiction. I think it's going to be very successful in studies with actually addiction. So yeah, they're great products. I would call them miracle peptides if they just didn't have GI side effects, but we can manage most patients through that as long as we stay low, you know, start low and go slow is our motto with GLP-1s. It's how you keep people from getting, feeling bad, you know, start low and go slow.
All right. Well, I think that we've, covered everything today. So you're going to go to Cancun. You're going to talk to everybody about this. So you're going to take your semaglutide before you go to Cancun.
Yeah, I'll be due to take a dose tomorrow. So I'll take a dose. And, you know, it's actually one of my tips to my patients that are on it. I used to have patients that would be like, well, I went on vacation, so I didn't take it because I wanted to have fun on vacation. I got to thinking about it like, well, semaglutide or tirzepatide doesn't keep you from having fun. It just keeps you from eating and drinking. In a weird way, I think it makes you have more fun because I don't know about you, but I've been on a lot of Mexico trips where I woke up the next day and was like, oh my God, I got a bad sunburn because I got drank too much, didn't put on sunblock, and now I have a hangover on top of that. So we might be able to avoid all that stuff. You can have just as much fun. But yeah, I'm really excited. Leonard and I, who to this day still the most viewed podcast was when Leonard was on, and I feel really comfortable that we're going to give a great lecture that people are going to enjoy. And anytime you get to spend time with your best friends and actually get to do stuff together, it's a pretty cool event. So we're excited about it.
All right. we're going to roll this out. If folks want to, maybe they are convinced. All right. They've been sitting on the fence and now they've listened to you and they go, all right, I think I could pair up with Dr. Chris and we could actually do something successful. What do they do? How do they reach out to you?
Yeah. So two ways, easiest ways either is just go to the website. You can see it there, theresearchclinic.com. Click on it. There's a button for consultations. Go that route. Someone will typically Lauren will reach out to you pretty quickly. We'll touch base with you. Second way is just call the office, 817-599-9902. You can get the number off the website as well if you want to go that route. I guess there's a third way. You can just stop in too if you're local. We have certainly a lot of patients that do that as well.
All right. So now we're going to roll out this outro. Good job, Dr. Chris.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for joining the Dr. Chris podcast. If you learned something today and you want to connect and get more information, visit our website, www.drkris.life, where you can find more great information or even schedule a time to learn how you can engage with Dr. Chris. Be sure to follow, like, share, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Dr. Chris podcast. I don't know how many episodes it's been, but it seems like we're kind of getting in the hang of it now, Dr. Chris.
Yeah, we're getting in a groove again, I think.
All right. This is an awkward turn off here. See ya.
Yeah. Bye.